So, Matt, let's start out with a question. And it comes from... Oh, by the way, this is episode... Ready to Shout Podcast, episode 396. Brought to you, of course, by CougarFan.com. Get all your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Randy Whittle wants to know something, Matt.
What does Randy Whittle want to know? Riddle me this, Randy Whittle. Whittle me this.
That was terrible. Thoughts on Rise of Skywalker, and where does it fall in your ranking of Star Wars movies? I'm not going to say yet. I want to wait another week.
That's fair.
Okay?
That's fair, because you know what? I got a spoiler on Twitter
It
came out.
Spoilers! Come on, people!
It was awful. And I was able to shut it down. I was able to like close Twitter quickly enough and convince myself that what I had read... Like, it could be interpreted multiple ways. And I was able to get myself to a spot where it didn't ruin my enjoyment of the film.
Yeah, it's probably that twist of that Rey's father is actually Chewbacca. Oh, dang it,
sorry. It's when Bane walks out on the football field and he's got that bomb and it's the Steelers.
Yeah, that's and Hines Ward. It's pretty brutal, and they killed Han Solo again. Do they have to do that in every movie? This seems like too much. Poor Harrison Ford.
Very painful for you.
No, actually, he came out in this one and he said, "It wasn't me. It was the one-armed man."
Oh, the old one-armed man twist.
Yeah, it's always good old J.J. Abrams. We'll come back. We'll come back and visit it in another week. We will give like spoiler warning type of stuff. And we'll do it at the end of the show next week. How's that?
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
So let's head to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So Johnny Brame on Twitter, at Johnny Dangerman. And if you want to tweet at us, it's at BYU_RiceShot. He says, what differences have you noticed as BYU fans outside of Utah compared to fans living on the Wasatch Front? Does being outside of the bubble give you increased perspective and or patience, or do you think your views are similar to local fans? Hashtag tweetback. Matt, what do you think? We've both lived outside of Utah for a long time. So I don't know.
So I think that's part of what makes this question difficult to answer for me is it's difficult for me to compare the experience to fans living in Utah County or in Salt Lake. Because I just don't have a lot of experience with it. Right. So I think it gives me a different perspective. I don't know if it's increased or better. I don't know that I could put a value on it. Does it give me a different kind of patience? Perhaps just because I think I have to choose to get BYU content. Like it doesn't automatically show up. It's not around me all the time. Like at work, I don't talk, like not a lot of people to talk to BYU about and those types of things. And so that changes the experience a little bit, I think. Do I think my views are similar to local fans? Probably, because I think we are all reading a lot of the same stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's definitely different. And I think your experience and experience of the rivalry with Utah is definitely different.
The rivalry is different because I don't have to worry about
the biggest difference.
Ute fan coworkers. Like when I lived in Utah, though actually I had some good friends in Utah that were Ute fans, and we would give each other good nature ribbing, right? But there were a couple of guys at one job I had that were kind of obnoxious about it, but you know.
But like a few years ago here in Houston, I was doing business with a guy from a different company who had been to the University of Utah. And I got tickets to an NCAA tournament game. They weren't the Final Four that year, but they were playing. I want to say they played Gonzaga.
Did you hand him a tip like when he delivered your pizza?
But when I got those tickets and I saw it was Utah playing, like I immediately thought, well, this is the guy I've got to take, right? Because this is a business contact who loves Utah sports. And so we went to the game. I took him to the game, and we had a great time. I don't even remember if Utah won or lost. I honestly don't know. But so I would have to look it up. But I think your experience with some of those things are a little bit different living outside of Utah. Like a good friend of mine from Virginia, when we lived there, He posted to his, I think it was on Facebook or Instagram today, he landed in San Antonio to go to Utah's bowl game. And I liked his photo. And I said, hey, have a nice trip. Like, yeah. Is that weird? Like, but I'm sure there's fans in Utah that also have those types of experiences with the rivalry.
I'm sure
there are.
The other piece is neither of us listen to local Utah sports talk radio. Right. And I think, and there are fans probably in Utah that don't do that. I think that's another thing that keeps us maybe a little more sane than some of the fans there locally. Because if you're listening to Criddle all the time and nothing against him or some of the other local, some of the more, you know, firebrand kind of guys, I think you'll get more fired up about things than you and I do. But I don't know if that's a location thing or just a what media you choose to consume regarding BYU.
But I feel like if you live in Utah and you were listening to sports, local, any local sports radio driving to work in the morning or whatever, you're going to get coverage talking about both teams.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and I very rarely get Utah content.
Yeah, I don't care, right?
You know, morning, Whittingham was on Mike and Mike. I listened to that interview. I actually have stopped listening to Mike and Mike, and I was coming by and I recognized his voice, and so I stopped and listened to it. And then I moved on to other things. But I don't know. It's just different.
You do wish he was our coach, though, don't you?
I was hoping he would take the job when we looked at him the first time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Mendenhall. Yeah, so. And,
but he did. I mean, he made a business decision that has turned out to work out really well for him.
I don't have any problems.
And he's worked out like 5,000 days in a row or something insane.
The other coach was just like, what?
That's a real thing.
Is that
yeah,
true?
Tom Herman has not worked out 5 days in a row.
No. I haven't either. So, all right. So moving on from that one, our brother Don at DP Mangum on Twitter says, what are your New Year's resolutions for BYU sports? I don't do New Year's resolutions.
That's actually an interesting. I was going to ask some people at dinner tonight. I was at dinner with some family tonight, and I was like, hey, I was going to ask that question.
Which question?
Maybe I still. Are you guys, who's doing New Year's resolutions? Do people like New Year's resolutions? I set goals. I set annual goals at the beginning of the year.
See, I set my goals not at the beginning of the year. I set them. I might start now because the new church program with the goals for the youth, right? And I've got a couple kids participating in that, and maybe I'll do it now annually. I've set them at different times when I feel like I need to readjust the goals. I'm not a big like, ooh, I need to start thinking about stuff because it's January 1st. And that's fine that people do that. I don't really care. I'm not a New Year's resolution guy. I'm setting goals all the time and moving them around because I completed it or I decided I need to focus on something else, you know?
But the thing I like about a resolution versus a goal, and maybe I'm just being too cute with the differences, is I'm totally comfortable setting a New Year's resolution or even a goal for myself at any point during the year that isn't necessarily like smart, right? Or I don't even care if it's measurable. Like, say I want to set a goal saying spend more time with my kids.
Sure.
Right. And then I'm going to keep in mind that I'm making a conscious effort to do that. And I'm just pulling that out of the air.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But I'll set at the beginning of the year some things that I definitely do. Like I set a mileage goal for running. That's a calendar year goal.
Okay.
I set also for running, I'll set a number of target races or target race distances and times that I want to hit.
No, listen, I don't think you're getting too cute.
I'll set professional goals. If I'm in a given year want to move to a different role or in a given year want to accomplish a certain thing.
No, I thought you were going to maybe get too
cute
with
that.
This, like, I don't know, kind of similar to running a sprint out screen pass on a third and two, on a key third and two. That's too cute.
Yeah,
okay,
too
we'll get
cute.
Back to that here in a second. To humor Don a little bit, I will say this. I would like BYU basketball to make the NCAA tournament this year. That'd be a great resolution, right?
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
I would like BYU football to win 8 games next year. Is that too low? I don't know. We can get to that in a second.
We'll have to look at the schedule, right?
And I want I'm going to get to my other one in a minute when we have another question here in a second. about Matt Bushman.
I'd like to set the resolution that we don't have any NCAA violations, whether self-reported or otherwise, in 2020.
How about this? We have them. Can we have them, but then we don't get caught until 2021, or you just don't want us to do them?
Let's just not do them. Let's just not do them. How about the stupid paperwork snafu? And people putting, Benjamin Franklin's in player shoes in the locker room. Or whatever it is. Let's not have those.
Sometimes it was a Lincoln. I think they were putting a Lincoln in the shoes.
How does my friend Abraham Lincoln sound?
Yeah, how does that sound?
Does George Washington here change your mind?
That's right. So those are some good resolutions. Wade Hillam on Facebook, and if you want to join a conversation on Facebook, it's facebook.com/risingshot. He says, this is a random question, Wade, but I love it. Why in pickup basketball do people go by ones and twos? Since when did a three-pointer count twice as much as a two-pointer? As a post player, I feel like this was a revenge of the guards or something. Hashtag let it fly. Hashtag death of the mid-range jumper. Hashtag four-point play every time. This is something that bothers me too, by the way. I think people did it for easy math, right? Is that why they did it?
I don't know why they did it. I'm with Wade on this. It makes no sense.
Well, but
the game of basketball is scored in twos and threes.
Yes, it's.
Why do we change that when we're in the driveway playing shirts and skins? Why does it matter?
I don't know. I don't know. And the other part to me is it's also kind of ridiculous because in church basketball, I just want guys to stop shooting three-pointers who can't shoot, right? You're sitting there playing a pickup game.
Making it rain.
They come up and do a Jimmer three-pointer and, it looks like they're trying to throw a brick over a wall, right? You know what I mean? They're just no, just don't do that. How about we pass the ball around and try to get it inside or drive to the hoop or something, instead of a bunch of old fat guys chucking it from the cheap seats.
No, Adam, analytics. Analytics say I should take this shot.
No, actually.
No, analytics doesn't say you should take that shot. Analytics says Steph Curry should take that shot.
Maybe LeBron, not you.
You should probably step in a little bit. Take the shot from maybe the top of the key.
And I always get his last name wrong, but did you see Giannis give his shoes to the little girl? Did you see that video?
No, I did not. I saw him accept a book some kid made.
Yeah, this little girl is standing there in a jersey, right? And he's amazing to watch, by the way. Is standing there in a jersey after a game, and he gives her the shoes, and she, starts bawling. She's, I don't know, got to be, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that range. And then he lifts her up, pulls her on the court, and takes a picture with her. Very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I don't know why Wade either. I think it's dumb. I think it was revenge against the post players.
I think it's math. I think people are afraid of math.
They're afraid of math. They like the ones. They like the ones and
the
twos.
I was told there would be no math.
That's right. Spencer Thurman on Facebook also says, more impressive this year, Fred Warner or Jamal Williams? Hashtag facebag. It's got to be Warner, right?
It's 100% Warner.
I mean,
Warner's got 90
close?
Tackles, 3 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and an interception. He might be the best defensive player in the league.
Yeah, I think you're overstating that a little bit, but he's very, very good right now.
First NFL rookie since 2000 to begin his career with 4 consecutive games of at least 10 tackles.
He's having a tremendous year, and it's nothing against the juice there. But you look at what he's done this year, total tackles, tackles for loss. Like you said, he's having a amazing year. Now, I get it. He may have committed some pass interference. Despite what
he may be guilty of some pass interference.
Did you see Richard Sherman's defense of it?
No.
He basically tweeted out and said that the Seattle receiver initiated contact, so it was okay. He did. That's true.
But that's not how the rule works, Sherman.
Well, it's not how the rule works. And if they had both just been kind of pushing each other, I'm totally with them, right? They give wide receivers sometimes latitude to mug the guy and the defensive players don't get that latitude. Okay, sure. I'm with you, Richard. Where you lost me was he basically like just held his arms down, right? Like it wasn't like a close call, and I don't understand how that doesn't get called pass interference, right?
Even especially now that they can redo it, yeah, and like the Saints fans the world over were just screaming watching that play, well, right? I mean, like
it's hurt them that now they get hurt on a play that happens not even in there. Game, right? Like
it's just insane. Like now you can actually just go to the tape and review this.
But again, Jamal Williams is a key player on a very good team. It is no disrespect to him, but we're talking about a guy that didn't have 1,000 total yards from scrimmage.
Right.
Right. I mean, he had a good year, but Fred Warner could legitimately be an All-Pro. He didn't make the Pro Bowl, though, right? But who cares? I don't care about the Pro Bowl. Pro Bowl's dumb. At the end, it's like, did you make that All-Pro team at the end of the year, right? And he could legitimately be a first-team NFL All-Pro. Jamal Williams is not an All-Pro player, right? So
right.
That one's easier. But Jamal, I mean, both of them are going to have an impact in the playoffs, which is cool. So, Matt, we have another question in here from @AJMangum on Twitter. He sounds like a really smart guy.
Wow, sounds like a real winner.
Lots of these things he says on Twitter are brilliant. Brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant. By the way, did you see the tweet that came from our account, speaking of me being brilliant, that got like 5,000 views? The one about...
I did not.
About Lawrence quoting Ephesians after in his post-game interview. Oh, I'm saying if a BYU quarterback did that, people would absolutely lose it.
Right? Remember what happened when Mendenhall did it when he first started?
And he said something confident.
People were losing their – and it was BYU fans that were losing their minds.
BYU fans, Utah fans, like all these people were like, you shouldn't cross these two things. And I'm just like, I don't understand why. But anyway, I thought Lawrence's post-game stuff is both great and absolutely boring, right? He says nothing interesting in his post-game interviews, but they're great. And if I was his coach or teammate, I'd love him, right? But
well, and it's boring. part of what they're doing at Clemson. It's just part of what Sweeney's doing.
Oh, it's Dabo's thing. No doubt about it. I mean, it's not like but Dabo is entertaining when he talks, right? He is highly entertaining.
Dadgum.
And the fact that you've got him and Ed Orgeron, like I just want – all week,
Tigers.
I want the two of them to just have them go back and forth and have them talk about football. I think it'd be fascinating. And life. Have them talk about anything. Anyway.
I'm telling you what, if there is a football coach that epitomizes Southern Louisiana, it's Orgeron.
Okay, yes, for sure. And if there's a coach that Tigers. Epitomizes football in the South, it's probably Dabo Swinney, right?
Yeah, it probably is.
Right? Like, they're amazing. Is. Right? It's not Saban. Right? It's
no, Saban's way too corporate.
No.
Right?
Yeah. He's way too Belichickian. Right? By the way, those Affleck commercials with him are bad. As if people needed to dislike him more. Is that what
he's like
doing? He's like just cranking the knob up to 10. I know you dislike me, so screw you. Is that what he's doing?
No, I think he's just taking a check, dude.
Yeah, but like, if I were taking
make
a check,
while the
I,
sun
would just,
shines.
I would just say I am not flashing my finger with a bunch of rings on him.
No, I would say, how much are you paying? Well, that'll cost you this much extra. Well, I'll do that.
No, but, he makes enough money. What does he care about money? How much
never
money does
money.
That? Oh, that's stupid. Anyway,
there's never enough.
So @AJMangum, this brilliant guy on Twitter, his question, because nobody asked it, was, how are you feeling about basketball? So, Matt, how are you feeling about basketball?
I feel pretty good about
They're
basketball.
They're a top 40 Ken Pom rated team. The computers love them. You've got one bad loss against Utah. And, you know, this Oral Roberts game is the kind of game that a year ago BYU loses. Got out-rebounded, outplayed in a lot of ways, and they still pulled it off. I love this team. I'm loving watching them. Pope's got me. I'm a believer now in the Pope.
You're a believer in the Pope.
That's what I just said. Is there something wrong with what I just said?
No, that's just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark Pope.
Seems like a good guy.
Yeah, I think the Pope is a really good guy. Anyway, how are you feeling about this team?
This is exciting. I was to see what they do going into conference play. I think, you know, Gonzaga obviously is extremely good.
Really good.
You know, but do I think that this is a BYU team that could come out second coming out of the conference? Absolutely.
So let me ask you a question.
Is this a tournament-bound team? I think that it is.
If
we're going to go to the tournament.
If they split with Gonzaga, I think they're in the tournament. Now, that's a tall order. I don't think they will split with Gonzaga, by the way. I think they get beat
by Gonzaga. Beat a number one Gonzaga team before.
That's true. And if they do, I think they're capable of it. I just don't think it's probable, right? I think you could beat St. Mary's twice, though.
Yes, I do believe that. And I think beating St. Mary's twice might get you there. If you get to the finals, if you play Gonzaga in the finals.
So, and potentially the conference tournament, St. Mary's three times.
Right.
Because we do
beat St. Mary's three times, but lose to Gonzaga three times?
I think you're okay.
That's tough.
No, I think you're okay. But, I mean, it'd be tough, but I think you could still make the tournament.
Yep.
I think you're 10 seed with their current. Now, I don't think they're going to drop. I think they'll drop one in-conference game that they shouldn't. And you just do. Even good teams will do that, right? I just don't see them doing like it's been the thing the last few years, 2, 3, 4 of those games. I just don't think this team does that. So I'm excited about it. All right. Sean Ritchie on Twitter, that's at DrTed64, says, who will Bushman's choice work out for better, Matt Bushman or BYU? So who benefits more from this, Bushman or BYU?
Bushman.
All right. Will BYU change the offense to focus on Bushman more like the 49ers with Kittle? Hashtag tweetback, hashtag climb on in, hashtag throw Bushman the ball.
Well, what I think happens here is that there are some other weapons that get developed. You get some consistent quarterback play, and then Bushman gets the ball more frequently as a result of that. I don't know that they're going to tool the offense to focus on Bushman. I just think that the personnel around him could create opportunity that wasn't there in 2019.
Okay, let me say what I've been saying for 3 years now. Throw him the frickin' football. Move him around the formation. Do exactly what they've done with Kittle. He is that much better than any other pass catcher we have on the roster next year. And I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, we lose Simon, Hefo, who else? I'm missing somebody. Shumway. Put him in the backfield. Put him out on the edge. Give him the ball as a handoff, right? Like, get him the ball as often as you can. If he doesn't get 8 touches a game, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. I'm just telling you, I don't care which quarterback starts. I think one of the reasons we lost football games this year is because they sometimes used him as a decoy and all this other garbage and didn't move him around and create mismatches. And I just think it's one of the worst things about Grimes as an offensive coordinator. He doesn't seem to care outside of Hefo who gets the ball. You know, I mean, there were games where he was open, where we used him primarily as a blocker. Put in a different tight end. Have Wake block, right? Like, Bushman's improved as a blocker, but obviously I get fired up on this one.
Well, but the other thing about Bushman, to be honest with you, I don't know that he was ready to go. I think he needs some more. I think he needed a little bit more time to improve, frankly. Well,
I think this is a good decision for him. I really do. I mean, it's self-serving, too, because I want him to. We really needed him to come
back.
It
was premature. I think another year is going to be really useful for him.
I don't think you want to be a 4th or 5th round NFL draft pick if another year puts you in the top 3 rounds.
I think if another year makes you stick longer.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think you roll the dice on yourself. You and I have talked about this. Being a 5th or 6th round draft pick is not, there's not a lot of benefit to that. You make it into the 3rd and 4th round. And if you're graded at 4, the possibility of you ending up as a fifth or sixth round is fairly high, right? Combine, all that other stuff, right? And, you know, I think it was Tyson Williams in his interview with Mitch Harper this week said a few good things about, well, when you watch him on tape, he just makes catches that you don't understand how that happened, right? And I just think he get him more tape and against some of the defenses, and if they really do feature him, which they won't because Grimes has already shown that he won't, then his stock could just rise that much more, right? So anyway, Matt, let's talk about the season in review. But that's our big why tonight is the season. We're going to talk about that football season that just completed. And we're going to open up with talking about the bowl game. Chase Blyle has a question via email. And if you want to email us, it's riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Chase says, run seemed to be working well against Hawaii. Why did Zach have to throw the ball 40 times? Matt, why did Zach throw the ball 40 times on Christmas Eve?
I'm trying to come up with non-sarcastic answers to that question.
You can give a sarcastic one. That seems appropriate.
I think we knew it was a track meet, and we were worried about scoring quickly. I'll say that. That's a non-sarcastic answer.
Okay.
I think we got wrapped up in the over-under is 64. There's going to be a ton of points in this game, so when we have the ball, we need to score as quickly as we can.
Algier averaged almost 10 yards per carry. Zach Wilson, if you take out, he got sacked how many times in this one? He got sacked just the once. If you take out his sack, he averaged over 6.5 yards per carry. If you take out Katoa, who didn't have a great game, but he averaged 4.6 yards per carry. We needed to run the ball 10 more times and throw 10 times less. That's one of the reasons we lost the game. Chase is completely right. I have no idea what the coaching staff was trying to accomplish. I get the track meet thing, but these run and shoot teams like Oregon type of offense, right? They run the ball. They take what's in front of them, right? That's what the offenses should be doing. And there were a lot of opportunities left from a running perspective, I think. I think Algier should have gotten the ball another 3 or 4 times than he did. And I thought Wilson ran the ball really well, didn't you? I mean,
yeah, I thought, yeah, Wilson did run the ball well. And I think he made good decisions when he did run.
Yeah. And by the way, if I hear another BYU fan talk about they don't want Wilson to run, I'm just so tired of that garbage. He's going to get hurt, blah, blah, blah.
Well, what's the point of having Zach Wilson if he doesn't run? What's the point? Like, that's a huge weapon for him.
How did he get hurt?
Yeah, he hit his hand on somebody. Yeah, yeah, he's not getting hurt running.
He didn't get hurt running. How did Jalen Hall get hurt? In the pocket. You know what the most dangerous thing for a quarterback is? Standing still getting
straight up. Yeah.
That's the most dangerous thing a quarterback does, right? I get that Taysom Hill got hurt on a scramble, got hurt on a QB sneak that was a freak accident, right? Tom Brady does how many QB sneaks a year? He's never gotten hurt on a QB sneak, right? Guys, if the quarterback can run and you don't use that, you're a moron, quite frankly. You're just like in today's game. I mean, look what they did with Lawrence in that game just Saturday night. He's not a great runner. He's a good runner, but it's what the defense was leaving open.
And he got off that 70-yard run. That was insane.
I mean, I maybe he is a great runner. I don't know. I've never really thought of him as – I've thought of him as above average, right? But if they're going to not put – when you send everybody deep, if they're not going to have anybody within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and you've got a guy that can run, then he should run. Right, and Lawrence can throw the ball. He's a much more accurate passer with his deep ball than Wilson is, right? So, and if I just look at this, and when I hear fans say that, I'm like, when did, you know, none of these people got hurt running the football. And if they do, that's, guys, that's what happens. It's football. People get hurt, right? Like, yeah, maybe they should slide more or whatever, but if it's third down and he's going for the first down, that's what he should do, right? He should, like, yes, stop and slide a yard short. He should go for the first down, knowing that that's riskier than sliding. Anyway, I don't know. So Matt, let's talk about those key plays down the stretch. All right? So you're third and two. It's for the game, basically, because if you get a first down, the game's over, more or less. Your first play call is to have Micah Simon take a direct snap. But somebody calls a timeout. Thank goodness, right? And I'm thinking, okay, they're going to line up and run a regular play. And then your second play call is to run a sprint out screen that is a really hard, that's a high degree of difficulty for both the running back and the wide receiver. I mean, the quarterback and the wide receiver. Why on earth would you run either of those plays on the most pivotal play of the game? Do you have any justification for that?
I can't justify it.
So I'm not being overly critical.
No, I think the third and two play call didn't make any sense to me.
Okay.
Like so it made no sense.
Let's talk about the defensive play calls. So Tuiaki has fallen in love with this three-man front and dropping eight guys into coverage. I think this isn't actually true, but it felt true, that Ohio State has had more sacks in games than we had all year. That's not actually true. But it's not actually that far. What happened with that defense on that last drive after they had been playing fairly decently before that? Was it something Hawaii did? Was it something... I mean, is Tuiaki's defense just... Is this new scheme he seemed to fall into from the USC game onward, is it just a bad defense?
I don't know. See, I think you hit part of this right on the head. This three-man rush and dropping everybody back. Now, if you're going to do that, you can't give up some of these big plays. Like on the third and one on Hawaii's final drive, and you give up a 38-yard pass.
Yeah, crazy.
Right? You have to be able to defend. And one of the big things that you saw them doing, and it's classic. It's exactly what you do against the defense that we were running. We're rushing three guys. You drop these eight guys back. You get into a zone, and they're just setting down in the soft pockets against the defense. And you're also seeing defenders not passing receivers off, right? So a guy comes across my face. He's in my zone. I follow him. I get to the end of my zone, and I just let him go. And there's nobody else. There's nobody coming into my space, and I'm not. There's nobody taking this guy when he moves. As he's moving across the field, and those types of mistakes when you're running that defense are inexcusable. If that's the defense you're gonna run, you have to be able to execute it better than that. But the big thing for me on the three-man pass rush is if you're not getting pressure, the defensive backs are eventually going to lose the receivers. Eventually, they're going to lose.
Yes.
And so you have to be able to generate pressure with those three men in order for that to really work.
Yeah, but
it doesn't matter how many guys you drop back. Eventually, a receiver is going to get open if that quarterback has all the time in the world.
But how many teams in college football can generate pressure consistently with three rushers?
You've got to have a game changer. I understand. You have to have a game-changing defensive end.
Even if you do, he's going to get double-teamed every play. Like, even Chase Young, put him on BYU. Yes, it would have made a massive difference, right? Because he beats, you know, some people would say he eats double teams for breakfast, right? But even if you have Chase Young, Ohio State doesn't rush three. They mix it up, right? They're doing blitzes. I mean, Chase Young blitzes.
Some of your three, I think if you're going to do that though, you have to have a guy on the end that you can drop back into coverage and send to linebackers. You've got to be able to do stuff like that. Even if you're going to stick to a three man rush, you've got to be able to do that type of stuff. You have to have those types of athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you have a guy like when we had Ansa and Van Noy, right? Where Ansa would draw blocks and Van Noy would get into the backfield.
Yeah, but Vannoy was coming.
You
got
to have that type of a comp. You have to have that type of
Vannoy was coming as a blitzer. He didn't rush every down, right? He's a linebacker. He was coming sometimes and dropping sometimes. We don't – I mean, Diane Gunwalaku was tied for our sacks lead. Right? Like, this is just a weird year defensively. I'm not ready to fire Tuiaki. I think he fell in love with the defense and he needed to adjust in the middle of the season and he didn't. I think he made a mistake. And I think we need to get more aggressive. And I thought we had the defensive backs, especially against Hawaii. Their best wide receiver was like playing on one leg. We should have been jamming those guys at the line of scrimmage every freaking play. Every play. Especially if you're going to rush three. You jam them and you have guys behind in case they get beat. Right? And play
man.
Yeah,
but we had a couple of those where safeties bit down on, you know, on shorter routes or on play action. And then all of a sudden there's a guy 10 yards behind everybody.
But you don't bite.
Right. Right?
Like, you know, you just got to be more disciplined than that. Obviously, they did fairly well in the second half, and they needed to stop that last drive. And maybe that's unfair, right? Because they had stopped Hawaii a lot in the second half. Who do you put that game on? That loss to Hawaii belongs to who? Coaching staff, players, who do you put it on?
If you have
to pick somebody, one person or one position.
I have to pick a single scapegoat.
Yes. A lot of people are picking Wilson, which I would not pick Wilson. But there are quite a few fans I've saw out there that were like, you got to bring in the next QB, right?
We're so quick to hook the quarterbacks Grimes. Here.
Offensive coach, or if they're all calling the staff, then the offensive coaching staff. That's who I'm putting it on.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on the defense as a coaching and player unit. You can't give up that many points in the first half.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. We were playing one of the worst defenses in college football, and we had just – you know, total, it looks pretty good at 500 yards, but those guys give up 500 yards just by you get 500 yards against Hawaii just by showing up.
And they were giving up over 200 yards on the ground, which kind of comes back to the original point that's, you know, that we got in the question is we rushed for 230 yards, but a team that's giving up again with their schedule, that's giving up more than 200 every single weekend. You ought to be able to just pound the rock.
Yes. Yes. This was a game.
We should have been able to just do that.
Yeah.
And maybe you control the clock that way and you keep yourself out of the track meet. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not a big, you know, like you have to win the time of possession thing. But if you're playing against a high octane offense, keeping them off the field is not a bad strategy. Right. And this isn't like people are equating this loss to South Florida and Toledo. This is not South Florida and Toledo. Hawaii was a pretty good team this year. Not a great team. We should have won.
They won 10 games.
BYU should have beat them, okay? And BYU had this game in hand and made mistakes at the end that cost them, okay?
Yeah, but if you look at the full game, I mean, this kid threw for 500 yards. I mean, we gave up 500 yards in the air.
500
That's yards. That's not a Zach Wilson problem.
500 yards. And we did get 4 sacks, oddly enough. But you know,
well, he dropped back 46 times.
And they didn't,
It
ended up being 27 times. But, they were not.
Two rushing yards. I think that factors in the sacks. But they weren't even going to try to run the ball.
No. They were clearly.
Because they knew that McDonald could sit back there and he'd have plenty of time.
But sling it.
And just find a soft spot and sling it. And if you're running out of time, scramble a little bit because you've only got 2 or 3 guys coming after you, and one of these receivers is going to get open.
They had 3 receivers with 7 catches. Think about that for a second, right? Like, that's nuts. Right?
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, they were a pretty good football team, and they played better than BYU did that day.
Yeah.
And that's why we lost that game. I mean, this isn't we definitely should have beat these guys, and somebody needs to burn for this. No, like, they were a better team that day.
Yeah. Now,
they're just better.
after the game, I was ready to fire everybody emotionally.
But it's Christmas Eve, man. You can't fire people on Christmas Eve.
Well, I wasn't going to do it that day. I was going to wait till the next day. Come on.
You were going to do the Lane Kiffin, fire him at the airport before he gets on the plane to go home and make him get his own ride home.
Yeah. That's what you do. So anyway, all right, that's enough of the bowl game. Let's look at the overall season. So Clayton Smiley, via email, says, now that the season is over, there's been lots of talk about whether this was a success. What are your thoughts? So before we get to his answer, Matt, was this season a success for BYU football?
I don't know. I'd call it a success, no.
No, you and I define success as 8 wins or higher at the beginning of the year. But in our preview show, and they didn't hit that. We're at 7-6 2 years in a row, we've lost to teams that we shouldn't while beating a couple of teams that we shouldn't, right?
Right.
But those kind of, like, cancel each other out, don't they? Like, the wins against Boise and USC get kind of negated by the fact that you lost to South Florida and Toledo.
Right, because the benefit that you reap from winning those games, you don't get it when you lose to USF and Toledo. What you get from winning those games in terms of notoriety, in terms of potential rankings and all those things, you give up when you lose those other games. So you negate the impact.
Yeah. I mean, I hate losing to San Diego State and Hawaii, and I think BYU, with better coaching, wins both of those games. Okay? That being said, San Diego State and Hawaii are not terrible football teams. They're similar on paper to BYU. So
and
losing
Hawaii won a lot of games this year.
So losing them hurts, but it's not like losing to Toledo and South Florida, right? It's not the same. And if they had beat Toledo and South Florida and they were a 9-win team, they were 9-4, even with these 2 losses at the end, I would have a different answer to his question. Would you?
Wait, say that again? If we were like 9-4?
If Toledo and USF, if you turn those to W's,
I'd say that's a successful season. I feel pretty good about those.
Yeah. And I am sorry for some of our relatives and others. I do not buy the theory that, well, it's Tyson Williams gotten hurt and we'd won Toledo and South Florida with him. That's probably true. You should be able to beat South Florida and Toledo without Tyson Williams. So to me, that whole thing, well, if he hadn't gotten hurt, well, every year you lose one of your best players. Every year you do, right? That's just what happens. You still have to beat terrible football teams when you play them. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I mean, you can't. And those are what ifs. And because you can't. It's probably true, especially in the case of USF, but you don't know that.
You don't know it, and the other piece is it's kind of irrelevant, right? It's kind of irrelevant. I mean, in the end, you can't lose to bad football teams and be a good football team.
And 5 years from now, nobody's going to think that argument holds water.
No. And again, it's probably true, but it doesn't in the end make this season, well, now a success because we would have been better if Tyson Williams had played the whole year. Of course we would have been. Right?
I feel like Tyson Williams is going to go down in history as one of the greatest running backs that we didn't get to finish the season with.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him just go kill it at the next level. I mean, that guy plays football.
You were totally right. And I think the thing that people aren't talking about is I think if Finau stays healthy, the last 2 games of the season are different too. If you have Finau against San Diego State and Hawaii.
I think if you have Finau in the Hawaii game and you go in there with a game plan, like their game plan was to just throw the football all over the field and you say, we're going to keep you off of the field and run the ball for 300 plus yards on you. I think with Finau, you can do that and you turn that game around.
Yeah, I think... Again, like the running back position ends up not being as shallow as we thought it was, but it still ended up being a problem. How's that? Right? Like,
so many injuries.
You thought it was going to be a problem after Williams, and I think there were a couple guys after Williams that could play. The problem happened to be they also got hurt. Right? And Katoa just didn't have a great year. He just doesn't seem – I've been wondering all year if he's hurt too and just wasn't hurt enough not to play, because he just seems a step slow compared to what he was a year ago. A lot of injuries in that group. So Clayton does not think this was successful, and he points to losses to Toledo and USF and Hawaii. I'm going to say it. You take away the emotions, the loss to Hawaii doesn't belong in that group, but they should have won. He's basically saying he's not a blue goggle guy, but we should be able to beat these type of teams and get 8 or 9 wins. I agree with him. We should be.
Yeah, we ought to be able to beat the Toledos and the USFs and then pull off, a game or two a year that we shouldn't win.
Yeah.
That's all the right. That's the type of team we ought to be.
So let's finish.
But that's just not who we've been.
That is not who we've been. Let's finish with revisiting our predictions, our over-unders to start the year. Okay. Finish this portion of the show. Wilson, 3,500 yards passing. I was over, you were under. Matt, you win that one as he finished with 2,385.
Hey, look at me. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Because did you say, I couldn't remember. Did you say you thought he'd get hurt, or did you?
Yes.
Yeah. You just thought he wouldn't get there because he wouldn't play all the games. Okay.
Correct.
25 touchdown passes. We both said over, and he finished with 11. So we were wrong.
We were a little bit off on that one.
Wilson was not as good this year as he was last year, statistically, even if you take into account the opponents.
Mm-hmm.
That worries me. And I think that means they should open up the quarterback competition. We'll get to a question on that in a minute.
He had surgery twice in 2019, guys.
It's not good. It's not good.
It's not good.
The question is, will he be 100% come next fall? And the answer is probably.
Well, he's going to have a full offseason, right? He didn't get a full offseason last year because they went in to do this, this elective procedure on his shoulder, right? So a full offseason is going to make a difference.
Okay. 4.75 yards per carry on the rushing side. We both said under. It was 4.4, so we were right. Yay, us. Leading receiver, I said Romney. You said Bushman by catches, because that's what this was. It was actually Simon with 50.
It was by catches. If it was by yards,
then you win. You get the. But it was by catches. We always do it by catches. Who's going to get the most catches?
What abs?
We did it. Over under on Bushman having a 65, 780, 5 touchdown season. We both did under. We were right. He was 47, 688, and 4. Because the coaching staff are idiots. Is that too strong? No, it's not too strong. It's not too strong. He should have 65 to 70 catches. He just should. And it's blowing my mind. We have the best tight end we've had in what, a decade, 15 years? And I just feel like we're wasting him. Anyway, all right. Leading rusher, I said Katoa, you said Williams. It ended up being Finau, but at 368 total yards. Like, that's not a leading rusher total. So there you go.
There's a lot of guys close up in there, okay?
Yeah. It's a little clustered there. Any BYU running back over 750 yards rushing? I said no. You said yes. I'm right.
Well, but I had a healthy Tyson in my...
Correct. Yeah, that's what you were thinking. I was thinking running back by committee. Tyson gets over 750 easy.
He was clearly meant to be the feature back.
Yeah. Tackles. We both said Isaiah Kafusi Fanua ended up being the top with 83. Kafusi was third with 60. We had a good guess. It wasn't a bad guess. Fanua did have a really good year, though.
But I wasn't going to come up with Fanua.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
I wasn't going to guess that. It was a great year.
Yeah. Most interceptions, I said Isaiah Kafusi. You said Gamwalaku. And it was Wilgar, of course. I mean, we should have known that. He led with 3. Kafusi, by the way, and
why did either of us pick the freshman that wasn't even on a scholarship?
Yeah.
The lead in interceptions.
Yeah. And by the way, I think Wilgar is going to be, I think they got to figure out how to, after he, I think they got to figure out how to get him moved around the field.
Wilgar is going to be awesome.
I'm not saying
and his game is great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying he's Fred Warner or Kyle Van Noy, but I think he's a couple steps below them and needs to be used in with that in mind. Then sacks leader, I said Devin Kaufusi, you said Tonga, and it ended up being with two, Gamwalaku, Mahe, Fautea, and Nwigwe each had two.
Yeah, that one didn't shake out exactly the way we thought.
No, but Mahe, Fautea, and Nwigwe, we talked about all three of those guys when we did this one, right? Those aren't a surprise. Gamwalaku having two sacks is a bit of a surprise. I mean,
it's awesome.
So is he your MVP for the year, Gamwalaku?
Well, definitely defensively, maybe overall.
I think he's my team MVP because I don't know that there's anybody else that on the offensive side I would give it to.
But he had 62 tackles. He's the second leading tackler on the team. Two sacks, a couple of picks. And
great
dynamite
special teams
on special
play.
Teams. He had a good year.
Hefo had a great year on offense. You can't give it to any of the quarterbacks. Nobody played enough, right? You're certainly not giving it to kickers. By the way, this Southam thing is bothering me. Shouldn't Southam have been the kicker the whole time?
I don't know, dude, but he's not going to be our kicker anymore.
I'm just going to be really peeved if he goes someplace else and is kicking 50-yard field goals for somebody else because we decided to give Old Droid the job. I get it. Southam didn't perform in games this year, but he didn't get much of a shot, right? But you had a guy that was the first kicker we've had in forever who was like an actual recruit. And I feel like we blew this one too. Maybe not. Kicking is hard, right? And guys get these mental things and they can't get past them. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know. You got to figure out a way to get people past that type of stuff.
That's your job as a coach, right?
Yeah.
So a couple of things about next year. Dave Broderick says, after the bowl, are you more or less optimistic about next year? What are your bold predictions to change the program during the offseason? I have no predictions, but I think they should change the offensive coaching staff. I get the consistency, which is usually my thing, flies in the face of that. But I think Grimes has no idea what he's doing.
I don't think they're going to change anything. I don't have a bold prediction on changes to the program. I think that we'll get one or two surprise transfers or somebody's going to get into trouble over the offseason and we'll lose them for next year. We'll have a couple of players like that that won't come that we're expecting to come back that won't.
Here's a bold prediction. Baylor Romney wins the starting job and Wilson doesn't transfer.
That's insane because if Wilson does not win the starting job next year, I don't know why he wouldn't transfer.
You stick around and wait for somebody to get hurt. You're better off. You're better off unless you can find an opportunity where you're the clear-cut guy, right? You know, and obviously that's happening. We saw it in the college football playoff. Everybody but Lawrence was a transfer, right?
Yeah, three out of four of them were transfers,
right? So, but
they also like. Well, I don't know. And they're all a little bit different, right? Like Burrow, did not show flashes at Ohio State. Jalen Hurts, though, was the man in Tuscaloosa until he wasn't.
Until he got beat by a quarterback that beat out by a quarterback that's like a once in a generation talent, right?
Right, right. He single handedly took Oklahoma into that playoff.
And
I mean,
Fields is a weird one because in some ways I still don't understand why he transferred, right? But it's worked out for him. Like when that transfer was announced, I was like, oh, he should just stay at Georgia. Like he's going to be the starter there.
But see, the thing is Zach Wilson, say if Zach Wilson loses a quarterback competition next summer, he's not going somewhere. A, he's not going to be able to play right away. And he's not going somewhere like Oklahoma
or Ohio State. He's not going to a P5 school He might go to a P5 school. So let me rephrase that. He might go to P5 school, but not with a guaranteed shot to start when he gets there. He might end up at a G5 school with a guaranteed, like a place like Nevada, Utah State. They might give him like promises. But if he goes, he's going to have to be Baker Mayfield, right? When he go into Oklahoma, right? You're going to have to go, and then you're going to have to compete, and maybe you win, maybe you don't, right? You're not going to walk on campus and to a P5 off of BYU when you led 2 7-6 teams. You know what I mean? Regardless of the injuries this year, like you said, two surgeries in 2019. So, and I'm a believer in Wilson, by the way, but it doesn't work quite that well.
But if I'm Wilson and I don't get that starting job next year, I'm out.
Okay.
I'm in the portal.
You're in the portal. All right. James Lowe says, percent chance Zach Wilson is the starter against Utah on September 5th. 75? Is that too high, too low?
I was going to say 75 at least.
Okay. All right. Chase Blyle says, on a scale of 1 to Jake Heaps. Hey, that's not nice, Chase. This isn't nice.
You got to read the rest of his question.
I know. How dramatic will this season's quarterback controversy competition be?
It's kind of funny. I don't mean to poke fun. I understand Jake Heaps is going through a lot of personal stuff that we didn't know at the time.
And remember, Geoff chastised us when we had, because who did we have as the zero to Detmer scale?
It was Riley Nelson.
No, I refuse to have it be Riley Nelson, because Riley Nelson is not at the bottom of that scale. I think it was Matthew Berry, wasn't it?
No, I wouldn't let you do Barry.
Who was it? I can't remember who it was, but he chastises for this. So I'm doing zero to Detmer. How dramatic is this going to be? With Detmer being the most dramatic. Oh, I don't know.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. Every year we make up these stupid storylines in spring ball and summer camp. And it's like, oh, there's this controversy at right guard. And there's not. And nobody really believes it. And they have all these closed practices. And you got like a couple guys who see some things. And you're trying to dissect all of this ridiculous stuff out of quotes. And guess what, guys? We're going to have a legit quarterback competition this offseason. It is going to be four realsies this time. I believe that Zach Wilson comes out on top here, but it is going to be for real, and they are not going to name a starter until the week before that first game.
So,
and they're going to actually mean it.
I'm not sure what to take out of that except for the fact that you said four realsies.
Four realsies. Book it.
12-year-old girls called and they'd like their phrase back.
Full send.
All right.
I don't even know what that means, but my son's talking about. I've been feeding it today.
All right. Well, that's enough. We're done. We're done talking. No, we'll talk more about BYU football next week. Are you kidding me? We talk about it every week.
We've got a real quarterback controversy on our hands, guys. Yeah. This is going to be great. We're going to talk about this ad nauseum for the next 9 months.
Well, we're already an hour in, and we're going to keep going, Matt, because we've got bowl games to preview.
Bowl games.
We missed some because we thought we were going to record at the end of next week. Didn't work out, so we missed a few things, but we'll do...
Super sad.
Super sad, but we'll do the rest of the bowl game. So here we go. Are you ready?
Oh, hold on. I got to pull up the schedule. Not that it matters.
By the way, Joel says, Everett says, the bowl game preview podcast is one of my favorite podcasts of the entire year. You guys keep it going. Making fun of the bowl names is an annual classic. Keep up the good work. Also, I'm all for baseball preview and talk. I'm not an avid baseball fan, but knowing what is going on in baseball is important to being a well-rounded sports fan. Thank you, Joel. You're 100% correct.
Facts. These are facts.
These are facts. Science, folks. All right. Tomorrow, New Year's Eve, we start off with the Belk Bowl, 8-4 Virginia Tech versus 7-5 Kentucky. Virginia Tech is favored in this one. I'm going with the Hokies.
I'm also taking Virginia Tech because cannot Tucky. All right. The only time I tried to shop in a Belk, they were closed.
All right. So there you go. You're still angry
like
about
shut
that.
Down out of business.
Percent chance you see some of this game.
It's at noon tomorrow. High. 78%.
I'm going to go with 71.4. Okay.
All right.
1 o'clock Central
Fresno
time
State.
game. It's Florida State, who shouldn't even be in a bowl game, 6-6. Who cares? Blah. 7-5 Arizona State. This is the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
Are we serious?
Tony
the Tiger for real? For realsies?
Like, for realsies?
And they're not going to call it the Tony the Tiger Cereal Bowl? I feel like this. Somebody should be fired for
moronic,
this.
Moronic, if you ask me. Worse than...
Sun Devils
than,
against the actual Devils.
Worse
All
than
right,
a
what do we
sprint-out
got?
Screen on four on third and second. Third and two. Third and second? That's not a thing. Arizona State favored by 4.5. I'm going with Arizona State because Florida State should just stop going to bowl games unless they're good.
Yeah, I'm going to take Arizona State, and percent chance I watch this game, I think I'm going to El Paso on this one.
Oh, gosh. This is terrible.
I got more. I got more. I have no a whole list written down for here.
Oh, my gosh, you're the worst. All right. Later that afternoon is the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, 10-2 and ranked 23rd Navy. 8-4 Kansas State. I'm actually, this game is interesting to me. Navy's favored by 3. I'm going to go with the Midshipmen.
Yeah, I'm also going to take Navy in this one.
Though I'm putting, you know, a lot of my coworkers are K-State fans, so sorry about that. None of them listen to this podcast. Percent chance you watch some of this game. It's 100% for me.
I think it's a little low. I think I have something going on during this period of time.
I do not. Later in the day, of course, there's 7-5 Georgia State, 7-5 Wyoming. Wyoming's favored by 7. This is the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Who cares? I'll never pick the Cowboys, so it's Georgia State.
I'm going to pick Georgia State in this one, but I just don't understand why anybody decided this game was a good idea.
0% chance I see any of this game, yeah. Even though I will be watching the Navy game and I could flip over, I still won't watch it.
They could decide tomorrow to cancel this game, and I might not even know.
Yeah, good point. The nightcap, of course, is the Valero Automobile.
Automobiles? You're writing your own jokes. I didn't even have to come out with
Valero
one.
Alamo
what
Bowl.
In the world?
11-2 and super disappointed Utah versus 7-5 and always disappointed Texas. The Utes are favored by 7 points. I'm going with the Longhorns. Hook 'em horns.
You know what's crazy here? I'm picking the Utes in this game.
Oh,
and
Utes
you know one of
win.
The dumbest, stupid controversies of all time is this Utah player. And is it a Nakua?
Yeah, it's a Nakua.
He did the horns down and he had to like tweet an apology. Have you seen the footage taken from the boat while he was doing it?
No.
They were going under a bridge full of UT fans, and 75% of them are flipping him the double bird.
Right.
And he does a horns down, and everyone is clutching their pearls. And guess what, UT fans? If you are that fragile, okay, you need to find a new hobby.
It's the same thing. Like, I'm not a Baker Mayfield fan. I think some of his antics are dumb. Though the commercials with him are pretty funny. At the stadium that it's his home.
They're hilarious.
Those are pretty
hey, can you send somebody out tonight? I'm having 68,000 people over
yeah,
this weekend.
Yeah. So
it's the third one. I jiggled
but
the
handle. I am 100% with him about when he planted the field in the middle of the Ohio State field. You don't want somebody to do that at your field. Don't let them win. Right?
Well, it's like the same thing like this. Well, and you know, he got called out the other day because they're in the tunnel to go out to their game. This where were they playing in New York last weekend? And some fans over the tunnel are yelling stuff at him. And he looks up. He says, why don't you come down here and say that to my face? And fans, and it's the same thing with these UT fans on this bridge. And I don't even get on a soapbox about UT because I really
well,
care less.
You're on one. I love it.
But like,
hey,
if
wait a
you
second.
Are as fans
I'm the ranter.
Going to
this is a...
interact with a player like that and behave that way, guess what? When he gives you something relatively mild back, like the horns down,
I just think,
or yells up and says, why don't you come down here and say that to my face, which is maybe a little bit more aggressive. But
slightly.
If you're going to listen, you can't just dish it out on these kids. And then we hold them to some strange standard. Like they have to take this, like they're here for our entertainment and enjoyment and aren't real people. You know, I had a friend at BYU, one of his greatest accomplishments as a fan. And I still think, and there's a part of me that thinks this is a little hilarious, is Arizona State came. This is when they had J.R. Redmond, and he went down there and the kicker was supposed to go up and kick a field goal and he was warming up and he went down to the front and was just relentless on this kid. Then the kid missed the field goal and came back and he yelled at him some more and he swears to this day that he made the kicker cry.
But could have been that the kicker missed a big kick, but.
But here's the deal. If that kicker decides to turn and say something to that fan who's treating him that way, he has every right to do that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And if they're going to – the horns, whatever it is. Like, everybody just relax.
It's a fake,
okay?
It's a fake symbol, the horns. So to do it down, it's not a religious – like, he didn't take, like, a religious thing. It's a fake symbol. It's a fake
hand gesture.
He's getting hand
gestures that are far worse that actually mean something. And he's a kid. These are grown men yelling at a child, a college student.
Well, Nakua's not a child, but yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah, yes.
Anyway, whatever.
It's stupid. All right. We're defending
youths.
Yeah, so
I'm picking
what
the
youths.
I'm picking the youths.
All right.
I'm defending, like, grounding in reality. All right, let's move on.
All right. January 1st, which should be the college football playoff, but isn't.
But it's not because we got to have a game at Camping World Stadium.
That's so dumb. Did you hear what Herbert said about playing in the Rose Bowl?
No.
I'd much rather be playing in the college football playoff.
Yeah, fact.
Freak. That's so dumb. Number 18, Minnesota, 10-2. Number 12, Auburn, 9-3 in the Outback Bowl. Auburn's favored by 7. I'm going with the Gophers in this one.
I'm taking Minnesota in this game too. I was a little confused about where they were going to play this game. I thought they were just going to play it out back, but it turns out they're going to play it in Raymond James Stadium.
For the love. All right. 100% chance I see some of that game.
Yeah, I'll watch some of that.
At the exact same time, you have number 13, Alabama, and number 14, Michigan in the VRBO Citrus Bowl. Alabama's favorite.
What is a VRBO? Is it a condition? Is it a medical condition? I don't know what it is.
Vacation rental by owner.
I'm supposed to just know that?
Haven't you ever VRBO'd?
I have Airbnb'd.
Yeah, well, you haven't lived
until you've VRBO'd. At least not in public.
I'm going with the Wolverines in this one.
You know what? This is going to be a great game. Like, outside of the college football playoff, these are the type of matchups that you can get excited about. And I'm taking the Wolverines.
Hey, all four games this day, despite all my complaints about the playoff, at least they're not playing a dumb game on New Year's Eve like they have sometimes in the past.
Yeah, none of these teams are coached by Lane Kiffin, so I feel pretty good about it.
that's a good point. Then there's the Rose Bowl, blah, blah, blah.
The granddaddy of them all.
Oregon, Wisconsin's favored by 3. I'm actually going with Oregon in this one.
You're insane.
Why?
Wisconsin's gonna win this game.
All right. Well, you're stupid. I think Ducks can beat Badgers. They just keep flying around.
I'd have to wait and hear what Mike Leach thinks about that.
Yeah. I would love to hear what Mike Leach thinks about that. 100% chance I see some of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I'm all in.
And then of course the Sugar Bowl is the nightcap. 11-2 Baylor, 11-2 Georgia. It's the think we could be in the playoff bowl, and Georgia's favored by 5.5. I'm going with Georgia. I actually think they destroy Baylor.
Yeah, Georgia wins this game, and it's not particularly close.
Yeah, and 100% chance.
A trip to New Orleans won't feel so sweet for Baylor.
Oh, boy. All right. And for some reason, there are games after this, and it's stupid.
Okay. This is silly. We're going to play a game at a high school field in Birmingham.
That's right.
Because that's what people want to watch.
That's what 6-6 Boston College. Versus 10-3 Cincinnati. Cincinnati's favored by 7. There's no winners in this game, but I think the Bearcats will win.
I don't know.
What is a Bearcat, Matt?
Not even sure what a bentarong is anymore.
What is a Bearcat? Is it when a bear and cat mated? For those of you that haven't listened to the podcast for a long time, for a while,
that is an old joke.
That's an old one.
That is an old joke, and that is not what you said during the podcast in question.
I did not say made it.
You were much more careful in the way that you said it.
Why?
But that's fine. That's fine. You know, when a bear and a cat love each other very much. All right. Take it smarter. I don't even know. See,
moving on.
Marketing guy. Just paying. to be the sponsor of the Birmingham Bowl actually pay off for somebody like Ticket Smarter or VRBO?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Sports marketing is often does not pay back. I mean, there have been some good studies done on this. You have to be very careful and purposeful when you do it. If you're Tostitos and you're doing it and you have this massive ad campaign throughout the whole bowl season, makes perfect sense.
The Fiesta Bowl. Like, it just works out real well.
It's not the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl anymore, though, right?
People still call it that. Tostitos.
It's the Fiesta Bowl, right? Like, it's not the Birmingham Bowl played at a high school stadium, right?
Legion Field.
So anyway, Tax Slayer Gator Bowl. It's 8-4 Indiana and 7-5 Tennessee. Wah wah. Who cares? Tennessee wins because I hate.
Yeah, because I can't pick Indiana to win anything.
And 0% chance, by the way, I see either of those games.
Out of protest, I'm not going to watch it. And, like, why would I do that to myself?
Oh my gosh, there's more?
Oh, we're not done yet.
The famous Idaho Bowl is on the 3rd?
Yeah.
Ohio, Nevada? Stupid. Yeah. Ohio wins. Don't care.
Okay. Oh, sure.
Sure. Ohio beats Nevada. What do I care?
Great.
I won't see any of this game.
No, I'm not going to watch that. Actually, I think am I at work? I'll be at work while that's happening.
Yeah, I'll be at work. I'm not going to watch that.
I'd rather be at work than watch that game. That's what that means.
Oh, wow. That's tough. Saturday the 4th, there's a 10:30 a.m. game, the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl, Tulane and Southern Mississippi. Tulane's favored by 7. I always go for a team called the Green Wave, so they win.
Sure. Who wants to play a football game at? It's going to be 10:30 a.m. game time.
Where is the Armed Forces Bowl? No, it's not game time.
It's in Fort Worth.
Oh, my gosh. It is 10:30 a.m.
Like, these guys are just going to be rolling out of bed. Nobody wants to play football at 10:30 a.m. It's like my son's freshman team. They practice at 5:30 a.m.
Yeah, it's terrible. No winners there either. Then there's the Lending Tree Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. 10-3 Louisiana. 6-5 Miami of Ohio. Louisiana's favored by 2 touchdowns. I'm going to go with the Raging Cajuns.
Yeah, I think is great is that with Louisiana State, Louisiana Tech, Louisiana Lafayette, and Louisiana Monroe, this is the Louisiana team that's just going to claim the Louisiana moniker. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
And I'm going to pick them to win this game.
Yeah. And then the real game that we should be talking about is Monday the 13th. Do you want to preview this, or let's talk about this next week?
Let's do this one next week, because this probably deserves some serious conversation.
Because I'm going to make the argument that this may be the best matchup in college football history.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like
I'm going to make that argument.
It needs its own attention there.
Yeah, maybe.
Hey, how far are we away from all of the bowls going this route, where it's just the Lending Tree Bowl or the Tax Slayer Bowl or the the All-State Bowl, the Valero Bowl? Like, how far are we really from that just happening?
It makes sense because I don't understand why, the Gator Bowl doesn't mean anything anymore. Birmingham, outside of the big ones, do they mean anything? Like,
the Quick Lane Bowl, I don't know what that was before. I don't know what it used to be called.
Do you care that you're in the Holiday Bowl anymore?
No.
You just care that you're in a good bowl game that pays you a lot of money and you're matched up against an interesting opponent, right? As a fan, as a coach, right?
The Cheez-It Bowl, they're doing poor Cheez-Its on your coach.
I never want to play in the Hawaii Bowl again.
I don't ever want to play a game in Hawaii again. It's like when the Patriots go to Miami. I just don't like it.
Ugh. Why'd you bring that up? That was mean.
Because I can't not bring it up.
My favorite is one of my college friends who's a Dolphins fan basically saying that they can't lose right even. Because they lost 3 spots in the draft by winning that game.
Yep.
And he's like, we won't get Tua now. Right? Like,
Hey, you got Fitzpatrick. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, he's the franchise quarterback. That being said, I think Flores might be the first Belichick offshoot that turns into a really good coach. I'll be honest. I think Miami, with what he's got going, the fact that the end of the season went as well as it did, I think it's great. Who's winning this weekend in the NFL? Patriots lose, right? I'm not doing reverse jinx. I think they lose. I think the Titans are playing better football right now.
I think the Patriots win, and I think the Texans win.
I think the Texans win. Are you one of those people that thinks they should, that winning a division title shouldn't matter? Like, should host a game?
That's stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Why should they get to host a game? Just because they happen to be grouped together with another three teams that aren't very good? They shouldn't host a game.
Yeah.
I'm cool with taking the people who win the division into the playoffs. That's fine. But no, the top teams host, period. Yeah.
But it's not going to matter. See, they're going to get – Philadelphia's going to get destroyed, so it doesn't matter. They're not very good. Dallas isn't very good, right? I mean, two mediocre teams. But you never know, right? The Giants did this as a mediocre team once and won the Super Bowl.
Right.
So you never know once the playoffs start. You got a Super Bowl pick yet, or should we wait for next week?
Let's wait and see how these go, because I'm going to make a purely emotional pick.
Because you're going to pick the Pats.
I'm just saying.
You're going to pick the Pats. Plus, the NFC is loaded right now. I have no idea who's going to win that. I have no idea. I mean, I think there's legitimately four teams that I have no idea which one takes it. I don't feel the same way about the AFC. All right. Well, Matt, it's been a long podcast, so we're going to stop now.
Yeah, it's probably a good time to call it.
It's not a record breaker, but it's close. It's close. So thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We will be back next week. We'll talk hoops. We'll talk NFL playoffs. We'll talk college football playoff preview. Thanks, as always, for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!